Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Hello, beautiful listeners. Cheryl is going to tell us about Ethel Bell today, and I have not heard of Ethel Bell. And Mary Perro is also with us in studio,
which is so fun.
Mary has not heard of Ethel Bell, but we did have to talk about the name Ethel. A few episodes ago, Cheryl and I talked about the women that had the most influence on our lives as we were growing up, and one of my women is Ethel. So I have a very sweet fondness for that name, but there are not that many Ethels. This Ethel Bell went to Africa, and that's all I know. So, Cheryl, you have lots to tell us.
I also have a very influential Ethel, which is Ethel Louise, which is my aunt, who served as a pastor in the Four Square Church. It was my mother's sister. But for those of you who know, my mom was adopted. And so my Ethel was not even 5 feet tall, but just a powerhouse for Jesus.
And you said she went by Louise.
She went by E.C. because a little kid couldn't say Louise. And that's what she went by, mainly Louise, and called her E.C. And so from then on, she was just E.C. She loved
adorable.
Children.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
But that's not the Ethel we're talking about, right?
Not today.
So Ethel Bell, I found just so exciting. Somebody asked me last night, you know, where do you find these women? And it's usually through reading one book that leads you to another.
True.
And
mm-hmm.
I always check the bibliography, because in the back in the bibliographies, you'll find books that you didn't know before. So this book, where I got most of my information, is Peril of the Sea. So that introduced me to Ethel Bell, but there wasn't enough information. So I found myself looking up obituaries, looking up articles, going online, which was a deep dive into everything Ethel Bell. And that name is not as rare as you might think.
It rings a bell.
It rings a bell.
And did you say Peril on the Sea?
Peril on the Sea. P-E-R-I-L.
Okay. I think that's going to be a little hint.
Not Pearl on the Sea, but Peril on the Sea.
Got it.
Ethel Bell was born June 11th, 1893, to the Reverend A.W. Roth and his wife. A.W. was responsible for getting the Christian Missionary Alliance Church in Toronto. So for those who aren't familiar with CMA, it was started by a man named A.B. Simpson, and he was himself a missionary. And he came back and he began to establish churches all over the East Coast. I actually spoke at one in Oregon, and they're wonderful churches. They're spirit-filled. They have an emphasis on expository Bible teaching and sending out missionaries. So I really love this. Before this time, her father had once worked with the Salvation Army. And so he had heard or he had visited and heard A.B. Simpson speak, visited one of the churches and said, we need this in Toronto. This is what we need. Ethel had three older brothers who all chose the mission field. Her oldest brother, Elroy, what a name, huh? Served in Africa. Her brother, Edward, right? Served in Laos. And her youngest brother, what do you think his name is?
Elmer.
Paul. Served in Peru. Paul for Peru. That works, right? So Ethel wanted to be a missionary since she was in her early 20s. And however, while she was still in college, she was stricken with tuberculosis. Mm. In those days, tuberculosis was a death sentence. She was placed in a sanatorium and her health continued to tank. They didn't think she was going to make it. And when the family was told that Ethel would die soon, her brothers pulled her out of the sanatorium. They took her home to be with her parents, but they prayed over her and they continued to pray over her. Well, one day Ethel felt like she was supposed to just get up, even though she still felt lousy. She still felt like she was dying. But she felt really prompted by the Lord that she was supposed to get out of bed and act as though she was in recovery from tuberculosis. So little bit by little bit, she began to teach herself how to walk again.
Oh, my.
Mm-hmm. And to work at eating. She'd lost so much because of the TB. She was really weak. Mm-hmm. So she began to slowly but surely build up her strength in every way she could. And by the time she was about 26 or 27, she was so much better that she could enroll in Bible college. And so she went to Nyack Bible College. Maybe you remember Nyack, because it was also the college that Darlene Deibler went to, and that Ruth Presswood, who we featured in former episodes. It was a Bible college that they both went to. Interestingly enough, of course, it was started by A.B. Simpson. And at first, it was in Manhattan, and then it moved to Nyack, New York, where it took on the name Nyack. And it just closed in 2023.
No kidding.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And it closed because of a lack of students and a lack of finances. Hmm. And because of the lack of students and finances, they lost their accreditation. And they're like, okay, we have no finances, no students, and no accreditation. Why are we still trying to do this? Mm. But they had been an incredible Bible college, also responsible for Russell Deibler and for Ruth Presswood's husband's education and Bible training. They offered all sorts of degrees, but one of their favorite degrees was a missions program where they actually trained people who were interested in the mission field to go on the mission field, even teaching language classes. I mean, there's incredible, incredible place. So Ethel graduated at 30 years old. So you can understand how long her recovery was. In 1923, she headed to Africa as a single missionary. While serving in West Africa, she met George Noble Bell. George was born in Ireland in 1894, so he's a year younger. That could be a little bit scandalous, but it's not. But it appears that he and his family had migrated to Pennsylvania sometime around the turn of the century. So he was very Americanized, even though his base was Irish. Together, they served in a place called San Mali in West Africa. This was not an easy post. The country, though under the French, was predominantly Muslim, with a huge mosque that dominated the town center. Also, the climate was either dry and hot or drenched in rain from May to October. In September of 1928, they had their first child, a girl whom they named Mary. The next year, she gave birth to twin boys. Sadly, the twin boys succumbed to a tropical disease before they reached two. Mm. A third boy was born in 1931. His name was Robert. While he was still an infant, he contracted the same tropical disease that had taken his brothers, and it caused him some paralysis. Well, Ethel and Robert decided to take their first furlough back to the States and seek medical attention for Robert. While Ethel attended to Robert's recovery, which was successful, her husband, Robert Sr., traveled all over the country, especially the East Coast of the United States, sharing about the work they were doing in San Mali. He was in Rhode Island when either, and this part is not clear, and it's not clear in the book, it's not clear on his obituary, but he was either hit by a bus or he was involved in a bus accident that took his life.
Oh, my.
So here she is. Oh. She's a young mother. Well, she's in her 30s. She's got a daughter. She's got a son who's just recovered from paralysis.
And so she's lost two children.
Two children.
Now her husband.
Mm-hmm. Ethel stayed just a year or so in the States after his death. And by 1938, returned to San Mali, West Africa, with Mary and Robert. That's incredible. Already tensions, though. Remember, this is 1938. So there's already tensions building because of Germany. In 1942, Germany had conquered France. And because they had conquered France, and because San Mali was held by the French, it was governed by the Vichy French, who were very much in the pocket of Germany. All the CMA missionaries were ordered to evacuate, and Ethel had to go every day to the Vichy French government and ask them for the paper she needed to leave, and they kept withholding them and withholding them. And so she'd have to go over and over again, and the tension is building. Tanks are in San Mali, German tanks. It's getting very tense. 1 month after the bells because they had moved from San Mali. They had gone to a place called Ouagadougou. That's my best I can do, which was still Vichy French, but closer to where the British were occupying. She finally got her clearance to leave the area she was in for the Gold Coast. And the Gold Coast at that point was held by the British. The British then supplied the Bells once they got to British territory. They were supplied with a lorry. They also drove in the back of a lorry and then took a train 375 miles to Accra, the capital of Guinea, where they waited for a boat to transport them to America. So it had been a very dangerous journey to the Ivory Coast. And now they waited anxiously until one afternoon a freighter became available to carry them across the sea to America. This freighter was called the Lashaway, and it was carrying all sorts of cargo from cocoa beans to exotic animals to even secretly gold. The Lashaway had stopped at different ports along the African coast, picking up various items to trade and sell in America. Their ultimate destination was set for Massachusetts, but they planned on sailing first to South America. Ethel Bell, Mary, and Robert were given passage, as well as another missionary couple, the Shaws. Robert was extremely close to the Shaw's eldest son, Richard, who was 13. At this point, Robert is 10 and Mary is 13. So you can understand, again, how long she has served in Africa without her husband. Richard's parents were Harvey and Vera Shaw, who had served alongside the Bills and others in Africa. Richard's two little sisters, Georgia, 10, and Carol, 7, were also on board. Now, because there weren't enough passenger cabins, Mr. Shaw, who was a pastor, had to bunk with the seamen. And Ethel and her children were given their own cabin, and Mrs. Shaw had a cabin with her son Richard and her two girls. Well, on August 29th, 1942, the Lashaway was nearing South America, just about 250 miles away from their destination, when all of a sudden they got this strange message that they were supposed to steer and veer towards Trinidad. But they were suspicious of the radio operator because at this point, the Germans were sending out fake signals to U.S. cargo ships and to U.S. military ships. And they didn't know whether this was a ploy by the Germans or this was an official edict from the United States. They were unsure. They had been warned that the captain of the ship and the radio operators, they had been warned of German U-boats that were
torpedoing.
That's it.
There we go.
Torpedoing. You know, I had no problem reading it over this morning, but right now, any ships in that vicinity. The captain of the ship ordered all the passengers and the crew, to place their most valuable items in what they called a ditty bag, D-I-T-T-Y. And so this would have everything that you felt you needed to survive, including snacks or food or passports or, you know, all your important items.
Are they being torpedoed or they're just under threat of the possibility?
Right now they're under threat.
Okay.
They're just under threat.
So they're grabbing their things just in case.
And it's just in their cabin.
Okay.
Just ready to go. And at the same time, the captain also told the crew, get the lifeboats ready. Get them ready just in case. This is a dangerous situation. We don't know where that message came from. This is precarious. On Sunday morning, Mr. Shaw conducted a church service. Afterward, the passengers, which were, of course, just the Shaws and the Bells, and then there was one other man who was a merchant from England, ate at the captain's table. It had been a long time since the Bells had tasted American food, and the pumpkin pie was especially scrumptious. Since the passengers' cabins could only accommodate four people, Mr. Shaw, as I mentioned before, bunked with the crew. He asked to be excused that afternoon, and Vera and Ethel remained at the table sipping coffee, and their conversation for some reason centered upon the suffering and martyrdom of the early believers. It was something that Ethel remembered and remarked on later. Mm. Ethel remembered that she had said something along the lines of, it seemed that God didn't call the present-day church to the same type of suffering that it had called the early believers to. To this, Vera answered that she felt that the most important thing for all believers was a willingness to accept whatever God brought into a person's life.
Wow.
This was the conversation.
The title of the book is Peril at Sea.
Right.
Da, 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 da.
The women then retired to their cabins for a nap. At 2:31, an alarm sounded, warning the whole crew of a torpedo that was heading towards their boat. A second later, a second alarm as another torpedo came speeding toward the Lashaway. At the same time, the Reverend Alfred Roth and his wife Mary were praying for their daughter Ethel and their grandchildren. They were in Toronto. They were praying that their daughter and the children would have a safe return. It was after their Sunday meal, and suddenly they felt so impressed that they needed to pray for Ethel and the children. And they don't know why the strong impression at the time, but they were obedient to that impression. And they were also saying, well, in just 1 week, they'll be here. They'll be back at home. We'll be able to enjoy our grandchildren. We'll be able to enjoy Ethel's company. That morning, Reverend Rolf had preached at Christian Missionary Alliance Tabernacle in Ontario, Canada. And Mary's mother had tended to her duties at the missionary rest home that she had founded for missionaries on furlough. And again, their expectation was that their daughter would be in the next Sunday service with them. And yet they were impressed to pray, and they obeyed that impression. That did not come from the book Peril of the Sea. That came from an article that Reverend Alfred Roth had written himself.
Wow.
That I found. Thank you, Jesus. Now, August 30th, 1942, remember the torpedo is speeding toward the Lashaway. The Bell's cabin was port side, and it was opposite, actually, where the torpedo struck and blew a huge hole in the ship's hull. But this was not damaging enough to sink the ship. The ship could still survive that because they were able to
close off the hole,
yeah, right? Yeah. So they'd only take in so much water. They could still kind of limp the last 250 miles into the port someplace in South America. No sooner had it hit, Ethel was thrown out of her bed, out of her bunk. She threw a dress on because she was not dressed for a nap. So she threw her dress on and she rounded up her children and she put their life jackets on them and then put her own life jackets on when the second torpedo hit. But this time it hit the fuel tanks and caused an explosion that sent all the Bells into the water. Her son Robert just remembers being underwater and then emerging from the water, but he couldn't see because one of the things that the cargo hold had was palm oil. So there was palm oil plus the oil of the ship was now covering the
surface of the water.
Yeah. So when he comes out, his eyes are glued shut.
Oh, my goodness.
And though he can breathe, he can't see. And he hears his mother's voice saying, Robert, Carol, I'm right here. And she had found a little piece of jetsam, you know, flotsam or jetsam to float on. And so she was able to just paddle her way to her two children. And Robert remembered seen his mother's hand. He was able to open his eyes enough to see his mother's hand with her wedding band still intact. And his thought, you know, here's a kid's thought. He actually wrote the book too, Peril at the Sea. But his thought was, Mother, and this is what he said to her, you still have your wedding ring. We've been blown to smithereens.
What the brain does in shock is really humorous.
Mother, you kept it. And there was another hand, one of the seamen, pulling him up onto this little floating piece of wood. And then they began to paddle towards Carol. They made their way, and they were able to bring Carol on board. And then she saw Robert Shaw. She saw the children. And they began to float around collecting as many of the survivors as they possibly could. But again, they're on a piece of flotsam. But here's the bad news. The torpedo had hit the side of the rafts, and at first, Carol tried to, the kids and Ethel went to go into one of the rafts, but they said, don't do it, because the ship was about to fall on the rafts and crush them.
Oh my.
So they had to swim away from the rafts. They had to swim away from the ship in order to survive. And they're swimming through oil, palm oil and fuel, and it's nauseating. And they've got salt water. The debris is all around them. Not only that, all around them are cages of exotic animals, and they can't save the animals. Some of them are so dangerous. There's like a tiger, and there's other animals that they were taking to the zoo, and birds, and they can't get to them, and they can't free them. And they don't even know how injured they are themselves. And Carol's dress is in tatters, as the clothes of both Robert and Carol. At the same time, I'm sorry, I keep calling Mary Carol. It's Mary. They did find Carol. Carol's 7 years old. And they find her. That's Robert Shaw's daughter. They find Mary, who's 13. They also found Richard Shaw, who was Robert's friend. So they're, like I said, they're collecting, and they find Mr. Shaw. So they spend the next hour kind of paddling around trying to find Vera Shaw and the other daughter, but they can't.
Oh.
And they spend literally hours trying to find them. Well, as I said, the rafts were blown to smithereens and then crushed, right? So what was left were these weird, they weren't meant to be rafts, but they were meant to hold cargo in case the ship had anything happen. And what they were they were these pieces of canvas that were stretched over these drums. And each of the drums, metal drums, weighed about a half ton. But they were 3 feet, they rose 3 feet above the water. And they were 8 by 10 feet. And in the middle, there was a depression of about 4 feet deep where there was seawater. But you could sit along the edges, but it was almost like a little pool in the middle, and it's salt water. So most of the crew had found their way to these cargo holders and had climbed aboard. There were four of them, and they could hold about 10 people comfortably. Anyway, the Lashaway, which had held originally 57 passengers, was now down to 42 passengers, and they're all distributed on these rafts. Again, they're using all they can to search for any survivors, and they're making their way through the water, but they've been pulled onto these rafts, which itself, to pull them off of this flotsam, out of this, and to try to carry, you know, lift them 3 feet where they're already weak, lift them 3 feet onto these rafts was not an easy task.
No.
At first, it's Carol and it's her father, Mr. Shaw. It's Mary. It's Richard. And it's Robert and their mother, Ethel, on one, and with just a couple of crewmen. But the captain of the ship has survived, and he orders the crewmen to have Ethel and the children on his boat. So that's where I'm going to leave you.
Cheryl.
Cliffhanger.
I'm going to leave you with a peril at sea. And there's so much more, both tragic and wonderful, both inspiring and astounding. So you're going to want to come back for part two of Ethel Bell. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.